Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. A man who has comported himself with great distinction in that conflict for many years, initially in the uniform of the United States Navy, in which he served with great distinction as an intelligence officer, ultimately serving as the intelligence chief for the U.S. Pacific Fleet, is our first guest, only guest for this full hour. He is Captain James Fennell, United States Navy retired. These days, he's a senior fellow with the Geneva Center for Security Policy, not to be confused with ours here in Washington, D.C. But we are very pleased to have him with us, as ever, to take stock of the threat that we are facing from the Chinese Communist Party, a topic to which he has devoted himself for many, many years, and as I say, really become a great resource, certainly to this program, and I think to our country more generally. We're always delighted to catch up with him. Jim Fennell, thank you for joining us once again. Welcome back.
Thanks, Frank. Great to be with you in the audience.
As always, Jim, there is a lot to talk about when the topic is China. Let's just sort of do, in the shortness of this first block, sort of overview of how you see things. We haven't spoken with you for a couple of months, I think, but there's no doubt that there are developments on a number of different fronts, whether it's the Wuhan laboratory and the COVID virus, whether it's the economic warfare of the Chinese Communist Party, whether it's their military buildup, that we need to sort of take stock with you on, and welcome your sort of overview before we get into some of the particulars.
Yeah, Frank, I think China continues their whole of government approach to continue to, you know, march towards their strategic end state of this great rejuvenation. In this last, you know, few weeks, months here into the new Biden administration, they've really kind of ramped up a new level of aggression, not just in the military arena that we hear about with the incursions of Chinese military aircraft into Taiwan's southern air defense identification zone. But we're also seeing a ramp up in, you know, we've talked about wolf warrior diplomacy and such in the last year or two, but I think in this last few months, we're seeing a real ramp up in what Kerry Gershenhack calls and talks about as political warfare, and that the PRC is really going after the United States, not just economically, not just diplomatically, not just militarily, but they're attacking America ideologically, and they're putting out a propaganda line that says that America's form of governance is racist, is chaotic, is hurtful to people, is biased, is white supremacist. They even write that on a daily basis. So what we're seeing now is the forces of communism in the Chinese Communist Party are really coming after the heart and soul of what America's constitutional republic has stood for at least almost 250 years. And so this is an area that I think the previous administration, Secretary Pompeo's famous speech at the Nixon Library, where he talked about the ideological differences between the United States and the Western world and the free world versus the enslavement to the communist ideology. And they are on the offensive now on that in a way that we haven't seen in my lifetime. And they're really pumping it out, and they're aligning with others in other locations in the United States, unfortunately, and around the world, that are putting out this idea that communism is superior form of governance. And they're very adept at it. They're not as ham-fisted as maybe the Soviets were during the Cold War. And they're moving it into the mainstream of intellectual thought in institutions like the United Nations, the World Health Organization, the World Health Assembly, the World Trade Organization. And then they're moving it into education and into the what's being taught in our own schools and what's being taught in the schools in China, and what they're in their diplomatic, you know, dealings with other nations in their region. And so it's what they call a comprehensive national power, and they're attempting to displace the United States. And sometimes it gets characterized as, well, America wants to be number one and control everything. And that's part of their big lie. You know, since the end of World War II, the United States hasn't been an occupying force, hasn't been a dictatorial leader. We have just set the example through principles that we fought for the establishment of our own nation, and we, you know, implemented those principles, or we didn't implement them. We provided those principles to the rest of the world to adopt as they chose to. And China is really seeking to destroy that image. And it's really something that we have to respond to. We just cannot sit back and let it go. And that's where I see things.
Yeah, Jim, that's a fantastic overview. And I really appreciate specifically the emphasis that you've placed on what some call soft power and the ideological warfare, I think, is the way you've described it. But really what you've laid out there is a reminder that the Chinese Communist Party is not only using a whole of society approach, they're using what they have called in the People's Liberation Army, unrestricted warfare. And all of these lines of attack that you've enumerated, and we'll go through each of them in some detail in the next few blocks, is evidence that we are facing a mortal threat to this country. As you say, they seek not simply to displace us, I think it's fair to say, they really wish to bring us down as part of the, you know, return, as they see it, to the appropriate middle kingdom role, center of the universe that they think is their due. So, Jim, just to stay with one point you made, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, during his time in office, was as formidable a warrior in that particular battle space as I think our country has had, certainly in memory. His speeches, his designating the Chinese Communist Party as guilty of genocide in the case of Uyghur Muslims, his efforts to stop their influence operations in Confucius Institutes, and just otherwise apprise the American people of the dangers we were facing, stands in such stark contrast to his successor, Tony Blinken, and, you know, the sort of flaccid, I guess I would call it, response that he gave to an attack in this wolf warrior diplomatic mode of the political warfare character by his Chinese counterpart when they met in Anchorage. Jim, we're going to take a break here in just a moment, but I wanted to say, unless we understand these various facets of the Chinese Communist Party threat, the CCP threat, if you will, we're going to find ourselves very poorly equipped to defend against any of them, let alone all of them. And that's where we're going to turn to when we come back. Jim Fennell is our guest, Captain United States Navy, retired. We'll visit with him about some of these particular lines of attack and what we best be doing about them if we wish to survive the Chinese Communist Party's menacing inclinations towards us. That and more straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney. You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We are continuing a very important hour-long conversation with one of the most knowledgeable men in the world, in my estimation, about the Chinese Communist Party and the threat that it poses not just to the United States, but particularly to our country, but, well, to the rest of the world as well. And Jim Fennell, you laid out a very important sort of overview, and you gave, I think, appropriate importance in that presentation to the political warfare piece of this, information operations, influence operations, subversion, and so on come to mind. All of these are, I believe, under the auspices of something called the United Front Work Department. of the Chinese Communist Party. Tell us a little bit about that operation and the kinds of things that it is involved in inside the United States that, you know, translate into weapons in this political warfare to take us down.
Well, Frank, the United Front Work Department, which is an element of the Chinese Communist Party, is their goal is to promote China's strategic agenda in other nations and in China as well. But it specifically, we're talking about United Front Work Department efforts, which is Chinese Communist Party agents inside America that are, you know, promoting the Chinese Communist Party's ideology. They're, you know, using information, using politics, political warfare, using associations under the rubric of things of people-to-people exchanges and, you know, you mentioned Confucius Institutes, educational initiatives, track 1.5, track 2.0 dialogues between think tanks and universities, and, you know, corporate sponsors of university education training centers in each nation. And the idea is that they're not just places where people come to learn Chinese language or Chinese culture. It's there to promote the Chinese Communist Party view of the world and the view of how governments are the center of the life of the human, and that the government is the God, if you will, because they don't believe in God. They just believe in the power of the state and the power of the party. First, the party, and the state is subordinate to the party. But the state-party mix is what is going to be what they're pushing. And they are very, very adept at subverting organizations in the United States that may be disgruntled, upset, and have agendas against the United States government. And you're seeing starting to see a really strange alignment between what's being pumped out in the Chinese Communist Party press on a daily basis and what you're seeing in the American press. And that really is worrisome to me, because if this had happened during the Cold War with the Soviets, people would have said, what's going on here? This is alarming that, you know, big media institutions in America are promoting Soviet communism. But so far, I don't hear people talking about it. And I look at Chinese press every day for 16 years. And for instance, right now, I'm just looking at People's Daily. And there's a commentary, it's posted on People's Daily, it was written for Xinhua, called America's Racial Reckoning is Still Far Away. This thematic that America's got racial problems the question is it inspired by the Chinese Communist Party, or is it a collusion, a cabal of people that share these political aims? But the point is, it's pushing a narrative that is dangerous. It's pushing a narrative that says that America never did anything about the racial problems in our past, despite fighting the Civil War, despite having a civil rights movement and Civil Rights Act, despite electing people to Congress, people to the presidency of different colors. And so, instead of the tradition and history of being a meritocracy, specifically the institution that I served in for 29 years, which was known as the most meritocratic organization probably in the U.S. government, which is the Department of Defense. And we're now seeing that being attacked. And so it's very, very worrisome to me that these kinds of United Front Work Department efforts seem to be successful, and it's being accepted as the norm, the conventional wisdom.
Yeah, Jim, so many things there to tease out. Let me just mention a couple. One is the degree to which Chinese communist propaganda instruments have now essentially bought American media organizations by placing these advertising supplements or, you know, wining and dining, or providing all expenses paid trips to Beijing for reporters on the condition that they will give favorable treatment to the CCP. We've also seen, I think it's fair to say, a very active alignment between the groups that are tied to the Chinese Communist Party. For example, the leaders of Black Lives Matter make no secret of the fact that they're trained Marxist with ties to the CCP. And yes, as you say, the use of racism as a weapon is a, I think, a very well-established part of the Marxist doctrine. You know, class warfare where appropriate, race or racial tensions to be exploited where appropriate. But Jim, you're talking about a degree of, well, collusion, I think it's fair to say, that would in the past have been rooted out. We would have had counterintelligence operations to shut them down. We would have prosecuted people engaged in, you know, working with or in some cases for our mortal enemy, the then Soviet Communist Party. How is it that that's not being done today?
Well, Frank, I think, you know, I think in the conservative side of the aisle, we focus in on, you know, why have these things happened and what have we not done to counter them? And I think those are good questions. And I think one of the areas that we need to do more, which is instead of focusing on the negative, which I think we must focus on the perversion of what they're preaching, but we also must promote the values of our founders and framers. These are the eternal values. These are values that are timeless and transcend any nation, and they get to the very heart of, are you free as an individual to do and pursue life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness? Or are you controlled by a party that thinks of things in the collective? China's got 1.4 billion people, a little bit more, I guess, after this new census. And their governance structure says, we, the Communist Party of China, the 90 million or 92 million members, we are going to control the rest of the 1.39 or 3.1 billion people. We're going to tell them what to do, and we're going to treat them as cattle. I live in Switzerland. There's a lot of sheep or cows around here and sheep. And you watch how shepherds and cow farmers herd and do things. I mean, they're treating humans like cattle. And America was different in the sense that it exposed the idea that people are individuals. And it doesn't matter what your skin color is, doesn't matter what your gender is, it doesn't matter anything. You're a human and you have the right to pursue life and liberty and happiness. And you don't need permission from the government to do that, whether it's government ruled by a mob or government ruled by an elite group of party communists.
It's a God-given right. Yeah, no, I couldn't agree with you more, Jim. And, you know, we're all about it here at Secure Freedom Radio. Every day, I think we're trying to extol those very virtues and point out the extent to which they are under assault from enemies foreign and domestic. And we both took oaths of office at various points in our careers to defend our Constitution against them. And I know you take that oath seriously, as do I, and it's a continuing obligation on both of us. So here we are. Jim, I did want to just say, while we're talking about the Defense Department as a particular target of some of these attacks at the moment, this so-called critical race theory training, that there was a very important letter issued late last month by initially 124, I believe it's up to 160 now, general officers, flag officers, all retired, but leaders of the United States military, and they warned very explicitly about what is being done to, well, good order and discipline in the military, which is vital, as you know better than I, to our readiness and our deterrent capabilities as a result of these efforts to identify and root out so-called extremism and indoctrinate our troops with this view that some of them are oppressors and some of them are victims and never the twain shall meet. Talk about that quickly, if you would.
Yeah, Frank, I'm very, very concerned about this ideology of division that's being promoted within the Department of Defense. As I said, the DOD for many, many years was the shining example to the rest of the U.S. and the U.S. government about what it meant to be a classless, genderless. We served the Constitution and we served each other, whether we were on ships, submarines, or aircraft at sea or deployed into the far reaches of the globe. What mattered most was this idea that every member of the team that took that oath and wore the uniform, we were equals. We were maybe not equal in rank, and we had to have a hierarchical structure to command and control and things of that nature, but we were equal, we were due equal respect, equal treatment. And in my career, I never saw anything different than that. And I'm glad that these general and flag officers spoke out about this. My concern is that they're from an older generation, most of them, which to me demonstrates two things. One, their generation understood these values and principles implicitly. And secondly, why aren't there more recently retired flag and general officers joining this letter? Why? And I think we need to examine that.
This is a very important point. Jim Fennell is our guest, Captain, United States Navy, retired, former intelligence chief for the U.S. Pacific Fleet, and to this day, one of the world's great authorities on the threat posed by the Chinese Communist Party and what we best be doing about it. We'll talk more with Jim.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back. We're continuing our conversation with Jim Fennell, United States Navy retired captain who has specialized over the course of 29 years in uniform on the Chinese threat and what its various manifestations are, most of which I think have eluded our senior policymakers, our media elites, and notably our business leaders. And we're going to talk a little bit about that particular problem in a moment. But Jim, I did just want to finish up with something you were talking about at the end of the last segment, and that is, where are the more recently retired military leaders? Why is it falling to those who have been out for a longer period of time to raise the kind of alarm that these flag officers for America have done? And is there anything that we can do to, you know, try to make sure that both those who are a little less long in the tooth, shall we say, but also those who need desperately to have people standing up for them, namely those in the active duty and reserve units who can't speak for themselves under the Uniform Code of Military Justice whilst in uniform, that they're able to have, you know, their concerns made properly known as well.
Yeah, Frank, I think the issue is this generational divide, or this is what's being portrayed by the folks that I talk to in the Flag and General Officer Corps, which is to say, well, these letters are, you know, they're written by an older generation that doesn't really understand the new realities of what's going on in American society today and equity and all these kinds of things. And my answer to that was, well, no, maybe it's because these older folks were versed in the timeless principles that our nation stands for, that they're not willing to compromise them. And they've sat quiet for too long and they finally spoke up. And the real challenge is to the admirals and the generals that retired in the last 10 years, those that all came into their senior positions under the Obama administration. Where are those admirals? Where are those admirals that talked about the Great Wall of Sand? And where are those admirals that talked tough on China over the last decade, the ones that did? Where are they now? Why aren't they speaking out? I served with many of those admirals, and they know damn well that the United States Navy and the Seventh Fleet and the Pacific Fleet were not racist institutions institutionally. They know that. But they're silent, and this is really offensive to me. And because they're silent, as you said, they're putting the people that are currently on active duty in a position of fear because they know that no one is willing to speak out. So these brave, brave military men that were brave in the face of Saddam and brave in the face of Omar or Gaddafi, where are they now to be brave to stand up for America's principles? And so I'm very upset about their lack of performance.
You know, this is particularly relevant to the story of a young, apparently brilliant Air Force officer by the name of Lieutenant Colonel Matthew Lohmeyer, who, as I'm sure you know, Jim Fennell, when ordered, as were all those in the Defense Department at the moment, the military, to ferret out extremism in their midst and take steps to try to make sure that it was rooted out. Well, this young officer stood up and said, look, I've been studying Marxism. Indeed, I've written a book about Marxism in the United States military. And I see Marxist extremism, and it does need to be both called out and exorcised. And what happened? He lost his command in a unit in Space Command, an important one, Buckley Air Force Base. It's really quite stunning to me that we're seeing that example, but you can be sure, Jim, I think you would agree, that the message is not lost on others in uniform as they're watching what's being done to this this outstanding young man.
Yeah, I mean, this is the strategy, which is if you take somebody out like this and make an example of them, then they hope that nobody else will speak up. And, you know, I don't know the legal situation. I mean, what I've read in the press is that this lieutenant colonel said that he requested permission to publish his book and was told that he didn't need to submit it any further up the chain of command and his than it would ask. I've also seen Admiral John Kirby, who said that he violated the rules because he didn't ask to publish it. I know John Kirby has fabricated the truth in the past, so I'm more inclined to listen to the lieutenant colonel. But regardless of that, the fact is that he was meted out justice as if he had committed some heinous crime. He was relieved immediately, and then I think of another lieutenant colonel who was sitting in a presidential phone call and leaked the contents of that phone call to somebody else who was not authorized. And that individual continued to serve out and was untouchable from any...
Treated as a national hero by a lot of folks. No, that's exactly right.
Yeah, Binmeyer, so I think it's his name a dual was. System. And once you start this dual system and you take away people's due process, even in the military, there's a right of due process. This is not good for unity and cohesion and good order and discipline and ultimately... combat lethality and operational readiness. It's not good for it.
Yeah. Jim, I want to come back to the military and specifically the threat we're facing from the Chinese military, I think after the break. But before we do, I wanted to visit with you about something that has been a preoccupation for us on the Committee on the Present Danger, China, of which I'm very proud to say you are a prominent member. And that is the degree to which U.S. capitalists, notably on Wall Street or in other C-suites and corporate boardrooms across America, have been actively enabling the various kinds of people's war we're seeing the Chinese waging against us, the unrestricted warfare of which we've spoken. What's up with that, Jim? How is it? And you mentioned the Cold War, you know, contrast. There were some, notably Armand Hammer, who were willing to throw in with the Soviet Union back in the day and help them with some of their businesses and got rich in the process of doing so. But it was few and far between, certainly compared to what the Chinese have been able to do to penetrate our economy, yes, but also, business leadership in America. Why is it that so few in corporate America seem to get that we are at war and the enemy is determined to take them down as well as the rest of us?
Frank, it's absolutely incomprehensible that American corporations are falling all over themselves to get into the Chinese market, especially after this year of the virus that we know now, even Fauci has said could have come from a leak in a lab in Wuhan. I just am looking at an article from Jinhua that says that the Chinese announced a week or so ago, China's foreign direct investment surged 40% from January to April 2021. So not only have we known that the Chinese are using our funds, the Chinese Communist Party using foreign direct investment to build the PLA and to build the capability to kill American soldiers, sailors, and airmen and Marines. But now we're seeing it actually surged in the first quarter of this calendar year. And that's not all from America, obviously, but it's a large part of it. It's from America, from guys like Tim Cook and Elon Musk and others that are wanting to just continue to make their corporations in the multinational corporation.
Larry Fink is one of my particular bêtes noires in all of this, one of the biggest guys on Wall Street. And you know, yeah, and Jim, what's so stunning about this, speaking of Larry Fink and Dalio, these are guys who are now very prominently featured in the campaign to get American capitalists and you know, financiers specifically, on board with the so-called ESG agenda, Environment, Social Justice, and Governance program. And yet at the same time, they are actively promoting investments in China from all kinds of Americans. I mean, public pension funds, 401k plans, mutual funds, and the like, in a country that is run by a government that has no interest at all, as best I can tell, in the environment, in real social justice, if there is such a thing, and governance issues. I mean, these are sort of anathema to the Chinese Communist Party, are they not? So again, it raises the question, what are these people thinking as they put money into, in some cases, people's liberation tied companies, let alone ones that are just part of this so-called military civil fusion program of the Chinese Communist Party?
Well, Frank, they've been so programmed by their handlers in the PRC that tell them over and over again on all their trips that China only seeks peace, China doesn't has never invaded another country, blah, blah, blah. They promote this stuff that they've internalized, bought wholesale into, which allows them to then feel justified for making their shareholders more money each quarter. And so from their perspective, they're lying to themselves.
I'm not sure it's so good for the shareholders, but they're making commissions for heaven's sake on it. Jim, this is a hugely important point. And I think the extent to which handlers are part of it is working. But I think there has to also be, let's face it, willful blindness on the one hand. And surely some of it is the sense that their government is fine with it. That wasn't so much the case, I think, in the latter years of the Trump administration, at least. But it certainly seems to be part of the program, the attitude, the policy preferences of Joe Biden, who has been, as you know, deeply compromised by the Chinese Communist Party, as have most of the people in his administration, alas, at least within those that have some responsibility for the China portfolio. This is another problem that we're going to confront. But one other that you've been deeply studying for many, many years, Jim, is the one I want to turn to right after this short break, and that is the Chinese military threat and how that is fundamentally transforming and what we're doing to contend with it. So we'll hit that and much more with Captain Jim Fennell, United States Navy retired.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio. Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Come back to the fourth and final installment of this incredibly timely and I think very informative conversation with one of our country's great experts on the Chinese Communist Party and its ambitions and what it will mean for all of us. His name is Captain Jim Fennell, United States Navy retired, now with the Geneva Center for Security Policy. Jim, one of the things that I know you worked on tirelessly during your time in the Navy and particularly at U.S. PAC Fleet was the emergence of a very formidable Chinese military. Some of it, at least, like the Belt and Road Initiative, like the concentration camps, like the economic warfare, like the influence operations, and all the rest of the Chinese threat has been made possible, as we were just talking about, by our money. But of particular concern is what they've been doing with our money, among other sources, to build up their Navy, Air Force, their missile systems, and so on. How would you characterize the state of the Chinese military threat today, especially vis-a-vis, relative to our own military power in the Pacific specifically?
Well, Frank, the PRC has spent the last 20 plus years modernizing the PLA. And they went from transformation of a kind of a Mao's era navy and military force into this, you know, kind of maybe the leading military force in Asia today across all domains. And what they were ordered by then Hu Jintao and since Xi Jinping to be able to have the military capability to conduct a successful invasion of Taiwan starting in 2020, to have that capability. And for the most part, I think that the Chinese military believes that they've reached that goal of being able to conduct a successful invasion. And so what we see more of today is the continued growth trajectory, the growth pattern of, you know, outproducing the United States Navy 4 to 5 ships to every one that we produce, that kind of growth. But they're also now, I think, really over the last 5 to 7 years, really gone into this area where they're operationally active. And so we're seeing more and more reports of, you know, operational activities with their new carriers in the last April and May. Both the first two carriers were operating in the South China Sea with the new Type 055 cruiser that has 112 VLS tubes to launch, you know, anti-ship cruise missiles, land attack cruise missiles, that kind of stuff. It's up for that new cruiser has escorted a carrier. So they have now the equivalent of an aircraft carrier strike group like U.S. Navy. Now, their carriers aren't the same as ours yet, but they have the surrounding ships, the cruisers, the destroyers with guided missiles. They have replenishment ships. They have frigates. They have submarines, and they're building these carriers. They're building amphibious helicopter carriers, and they're exercising them. They're training with them, and they're doing all sorts of things. In fact, just this last week, we saw a report here in the last few days where it said thousands of pieces of ordnance were delivered by Chinese aircraft into the South China Sea, conducting live fire drills and live fire testing. And PLA warplanes rained down thousands of munitions in the South China Sea shooting exercise. So they're doing a lot of this, and most of it, to be honest, from my time on active duty, would not be reported in the press. So when I see this increase in reporting from the PRC press about their military training, it just reminds me that they haven't just acquired munitions that are superior in some ways to ours, like in the anti-ship cruise missile arena, but they're training with them, and they're training in a joint environment where they're bringing together the Air Force, Navy, supported by the Strategic Support Force, which provides cyber defense and cyber offensive capabilities. And this is something that's, I don't think people really truly understand how capable the Chinese military is within the first two island chains. Some can argue and say that they're not a global naval force like the U.S. Navy is today. But given where our Navy has been over the last couple of decades, the problems that we've had with training, with collisions at sea in 2017, the problem that we have to even just field a combat-capable aircraft carrier, the next-generation Ford-class carrier, and the problems that that's having, the historic problems of the littoral combat ship that's been around for a decade. We're already retiring the first couple of littoral combat ships after 10 years that never really materialized to be what we thought they would be when they were first envisioned over 30 years ago as this Street Fighter concept. And then we went through the Zumwalt-class cruiser fiasco where we built this billion-dollar ship, and we only built 3 of them, and they don't have any weapon system that fires beyond a little 5-inch gun, if you will. And so the United States Navy and our military are having problems producing weapons to fight a peer competitor, whereas the Chinese have 20 years of building the tools necessary to fight a peer competitor, the U.S., and they're training to do it, and they've written the doctrine for it, and they've operationalized it, and they're hiding it from it as well. I was just in a recent seminar where they talked about amphibious warfare, and we were noting that there hadn't been really one big, massive Chinese Navy, Marine Corps amphibious operational exercise conducted for about 8 years or more, but smaller bit piece elements are being tested individually. And I think part of that is because the Chinese recognize that they want to hide their capability in some sense from us still, so that they can have a bigger surprise and shock when they actually would pull off an invasion.
But that seems to be in the works. I think it's unquestionably the case that they're hoping to intimidate the Taiwanese into capitulation, but if not, that they're getting ready for event of forcible conquest, should that become, as they see it, necessary. Unfortunately, Jim, this is not the only part of the military domain that they are seeking to dominate, certainly in the Western Pacific, but arguably in terms of deterring the United States from acting against their interests far more widely. Talk a little bit about missile forces and space capabilities that the Chinese are bringing to bear as well, to both project power as well as, and obviously air forces too, to assure that we are perhaps checkmated in terms of things that we may feel we should do in the event things go seriously bad with the Chinese, Taiwan, or more broadly.
Yeah, I think in terms of the strategic rocket force, China is by far, I think I would say even over the Russians, a world leader in strategic rocket testing and technology and new innovative things like hypersonic vehicles. They've developed specifically anti-carrier ballistic missiles that can range, large deck ships like our aircraft carriers or amphibious carriers, even our command and control ship like the Blue Ridge on the 7th Fleet Command Ship. They can be targeted by these anti-ship ballistic missiles from the Chinese mainland all the way out to Guam. And that's had an impact. We saw that during the Trump administration. And they tested that last August. They tested out, we believe, a combination of DF-21 and DF-26, DF-21D and DF-26 at a moving target in the South China Sea, a maneuvering target. We don't know how fast it was going. It's not in the public domain, but we at least know that it was probably a moving target, and they hit it. So this is another step in that development of that weapon system capability. And we're seeing that combined with an increase in space assets that the Chinese are putting up, where they're developing, an ISR, intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance structure in space that will allow them to have, kind of the equivalent of the intelligence capabilities that the United States has enjoyed over the last, since the Cold War, during the Cold War. The Chinese are pursuing that.
Critical element of our overall capability and a vulnerability, too. If they have the means not only to operate there, as you say, in the ISR areas, but also to use weapons to attack our assets, no?
Yeah, the weaponization of space is probably the next area that, it's clear that that's why President Trump and the Department of Defense moved forward to create the Space Force. It was because of the concern over the weaponization of space by China. China's been very coy about this, saying that they would never do that, yet we have some, serious concerns about their ability to do that and what they're putting up in space. In fact, it's this space station that's...
It's not what they say, Jim. It's what they do, whether it's, as you say, space stations or otherwise. We are hard out of time, my friend. We've covered only a fraction of what I hope we might, but it's been very, very helpful, very thoughtful as always, and very informative. Jim Fennell, we appreciate your continuing service to our country, and not least as a member of our Committee on the Present Danger China, and look forward to having you back on Secure Freedom Radio again soon. Thank you for your time today, my friend. God bless you and keep up the great work. I hope we'll have the rest of you back with us again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.